It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
This was a planned and executed strategy that has left us with 2.3 million people in prison in America, 5% of the world's population and 25% of the world's imprisoned population.
Jeffrey Robinson, ACLU Deputy Director, speaks about the work of the ACLU's Center for Justice in reforming the policies of over-incarceration that have led the U.S. to imprison more people than any other country in the world. And during this week's News You Can Use, we explain six reasons why the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development needs a qualified leader. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 299, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.wrir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, is a critically important federal agency that deserves a qualified leader for six reasons. 1. HUD makes it possible for families of color, middle-income families, and millennials to buy homes. It manages the Federal Housing Administration, or FHA, which insures private mortgage loans against the risk of default by the borrower. FHA has insured more than 40 million homes, and its share of single-family purchased loan originations more than doubled between 2004 and 2015. 2. HUD makes sure low-income families have access to housing. HUD manages a variety of rental assistance programs, from public housing to housing vouchers, in order to ensure that more low-income families have decent, safe, and affordable place to live. More than 5 million low-income households use federal rental assistance, and without it, many of these families would likely experience homelessness. 3. HUD promotes economic mobility for whole communities. Last year, HUD finalized a rule that requires local governments that use HUD funding to examine patterns of poverty and residential segregation and to put forward a credible plan for addressing these challenges. That's essential in a country that is becoming increasingly diverse. 4. HUD addresses discrimination in the housing market. HUD processes significantly more housing discrimination complaints than any other federal agency, an average of 9,200 per year from 2010 to 2013. The complaints are typically rooted in someone's race or disability, and nearly a third result in some form of penalty against an offending lender or landlord. 5. HUD is the biggest source of funding to prevent homelessness. HUD has been responsible for the development of tens of thousands of housing units to house people who are homeless or at risk of homelessness. HUD also helps to ensure that residents living in these units receive the social support services they need to get back on their feet and to avoid homelessness in the future. 6th, HUD helps rebuild communities after natural disasters. HUD played a major role in the recovery of the Gulf Coast after Hurricane Katrina displaced more than 1 million people. HUD invested $20 billion in affected states, which supported the long-term recovery of the region's housing, economy, and infrastructure. For all these reasons, HUD needs an engaged, qualified, and experienced leader. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. The ACLU Center for Justice is focused on the problems in the U.S. criminal justice system. At this year's annual statewide legal aid conference, Jeffrey Robinson, ACLU Deputy Director, spoke about the work of his center in reforming the policies of over-incarceration that have led the U.S. to imprison more people than any other country in the world. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show was there, and here is the first part of his remarks.
I am the director of the Center for Justice at the ACLU. That is the center that does all of the criminal law reform work that the ACLU is trying to do in this country, attacking mass incarceration, attacking racialized policing, attacking bail and debtors prison kinds of concepts that are holding people in jail simply because they don't have money, not because they're dangerous or because they won't come back. And there are times when it gets kind of crazy. And, I gave a talk like this a couple of years ago, and our friend over at the AV was there when I gave it. And in that particular week, I can't remember what insane things happened, but there are times when you just have to go to someone, to go to a philosopher or a thinker, someone that can help you put things in perspective. And for me, for a while, the last couple of years, it's been Yogi Berra, Lawrence Peter Berra. And he's actually a brilliant man. And so I'm going to help him walk through some of the things I'd like you to think about this evening. And that's the first one. You can absorb a lot just by watching. Now, you have all seen police videos that are horrific. And I'm about to show you a police video, but it ain't what you're expecting. The Camden, New Jersey Police Department, not a bastion of liberal thought, but they spent $300,000 on de-escalation training. 911 call, black male with an 8-inch butcher knife, threatening people. This isn't a question of, oh, was he doing something dangerous? Watch what he does here. This man is dangerous. And the Camden, New Jersey police come full force. And you know what they do? In Chicago, Laquan McDonald was shot 16 times in 14 seconds carrying a knife. Sir, drop the knife. And do you know what the Camden Police Department did? They walked with him. They sent patrol cars in front of him to clear the street so that no pedestrians would be injured or in danger. And then they formed a semicircle around him. And they walked with him because their police chief had been instructing those officers that the life of a suspect is incredibly valuable and must be preserved at all costs. Now watch here. This is amazing. Other police agencies responded to the 911 call. Many of them have their guns out. They are ready to shoot him. And you know what the Camden, New Jersey police did? They said, don't shoot him. We've got this. Don't shoot him. So I'm going to tell you how it ended. They followed him for almost 10 minutes. And one of the times when he was swinging the knife, he dropped it. And they tackled him. And he had a boo-boo right here because his chin scraped the ground where they tackled him. He wasn't hurt. No officer was hurt. No civilian was hurt. Turns out he doesn't have a long prior record. He's got some mental health issues, and he was off his antipsychotic medication. This man is alive today because the Camden, New Jersey police said, we're not stuck inside of Mobile with the Memphis Blues again. We can actually leave. We can actually do something different. So whenever anybody tells you, no, no, these police problems, they're too complicated. There's no way to end it differently. BS. And there's the proof. It can be done differently. Now, one of the other things that Yogi Berra tells us is that it's this one of his favorite quotes. It's like deja vu all over again. And I'll tell you, this edited edition of Time magazine from 2015 is really interesting with that picture, and it's taken in black and white, and I think they obviously did that on purpose. It's hard to tell whether this is 1968 or 2015 in this picture. I just want to give you some of the statistics about police killings in America. And what I'd ask you to think about is that what is different, in my view, from 1968 to 2015, and I don't have it up here with me, but if I did, I'd pull out my cell phone. That's what's different. It's not that these things have never been happening before. I think everybody in this room knows that's not true. It's that now we are seeing them live in black and white or living color and seeing images that are being burned into all of our heads. And it's very difficult to watch. Do you remember this from 1973 when they were busing in Boston and a black man is attacked with the American flag? It's like deja vu all over again. It's another thing that Yogi tells us. And it's true and something that we need to think about. Interesting book that I would recommend to you. But what I want to recommend to you are the words of John Ehrlichman. On Nixon's 1968 strategy, we'll go after the racist. The subliminal appeal to the anti-black voter was always a part of what Nixon did. And I'll ask, sir, would you mind just reading, because I can't really see the screen, but the next thing that comes up from Mr. Ehrlichman. And this is on tape. And so this is not new. This has been on tape since 1990. Part of it is that we just haven't paid attention. Did we know we were lying about the drugs? Of course we did. Because today, in 2015, when President Obama goes to West Virginia and we are talking about heroin addiction that is blanketing areas of the country, and people are throwing up their hands and going, oh my God, this is horrific. This is a medical problem. This isn't a criminal justice problem. We can't be putting our kids in jail for this stuff. Well, have no mistake about what John Ehrlichman said. 1968, Richard Nixon is elected, and look at what happened. He wasn't arrested till later, but look at what happened when they took office. And my point is, this was not by mistake. This was not a coincidence. This was a planned and executed strategy that has left us with 2.3 million people in prison in America, 5% of the world's population and 25% of the world's imprisoned population. And we know that they were lying about the drugs because we know that drug addiction is a medical issue, not a criminal justice issue. And now there are drug courts all over the country, most of them filled with white defendants, because the people of color, they have prior records for drugs. So they can't get into drug court if they get arrested again because they have a prior record. Yogi Berra would say, And this is not just a Republican. This goes across party lines. If you don't know where you're going, you don't know, you might end up someplace else. As you're thinking about criminal justice, understand this is a very complicated issue. If you look at the top of this screen, it gives you an idea of the different kinds of ways that people can be under criminal justice control, in jail, on probation, on parole, these different things. Look at those numbers. It is radically different in every state in America. Look at where Virginia is. Virginia goes to the top if you move the numbers around in some of the other figures. But my point being that there is no one solution to these problems. Each state is dealing with these problems in different ways, and that's what we're going to have to do in terms of trying to take this on, state by state, a 50-state strategy to try and deal with mass incarceration. So a nickel ain't worth a dime anymore. And if you look at that chart, everybody took a hit during the 2008 crash. But look at that chart. And it comes down to this. For every dollar that the average white American has in his or her pocket, blacks have a nickel. And this is the statistic that really got to me, or this study. This study has been repeated 6 times since 1970, and it has always shown the exact same thing. They dummy up a bunch of resumes with identical qualifications. They group them into categories. They send them out to the employers. And what happens when the employers get the resumes? The white candidates get more callbacks than the black candidates. The less qualified white candidates get more callbacks than the highly qualified black candidates. And the highly skilled black candidates get about the same callbacks as the lower skilled candidates. These are attitudes that have to change in America. But I remember the conversations that I had with my parents when I was 11 and 12, and pardon my French, and shit was blowing up in Memphis, Tennessee, and all over the South. And I remember driving from Memphis to Nashville, where my grandparents lived, and stopping on the side of the road, and we would always carry big pickle jars because we had to stop and pee in those pickle jars because we couldn't go to the bathroom. And I remember the looks on my parents' faces when those things started to change. And it was transformational for them. But quite frankly, me being able to use the same bathroom that a white person can, so what?
You've been listening to Jeffrey Robinson, ACLU Deputy Director, speaking about the work of the ACLU's Center for Justice in reforming the policies of over-incarceration that have led the U.S. to imprison more people than any other country in the world. We'll be back in a moment. We continue now with the remarks of Jeffrey Robinson, ACLU Deputy Director of the Center for Justice, on the problems in the U.S. criminal justice system.
The conversations we are having today about racial justice and economic justice are fundamentally different than they have ever been at any time in my life. And that's why I took this job at the ACLU, because the most dangerous phrase in the English language is, this is the way we've always done it. And for lawyers, that is especially important because we live in a world, we were talking at the table, we live in a world of precedent. Precedent is what, you know, we're taught in law school. The way we've always done it means something. But Yogi tells us this. You have to give 100% in the first half of the game, and if that isn't enough, in the second half, you have to give what's left. And this is what I think he was talking about. Mary McLeod Bethune, woman who was 16th of 17 children born to her family, parents were slaves. No way this woman should succeed, and yet she established the first accredited black college that today is Bethune-Cookman College in Florida, and had people of color going to that school and getting educated. In 1939, she spoke on a radio show called Democracy in America, and the question presented to the people speaking on that radio show was, what does democracy mean to you? This is part of what she said. Not so much for what she is, but for what we know she can be. Charles Hamilton Houston was arguably the most brilliant lawyer of the 20th century. And few people know who he was. Served in World War I, went to Harvard Law School, and was president of the Law Review in 1921. How smart do you think you had to be as a black man in 1921 to go to Harvard Law School and end up president of the Law Review? Few people realize that he is the architect of the legal strategy that resulted in Brown versus the Board of Education. If Thurgood Marshall was standing here on the stage with me, he would tell you, I carried his briefcase. I didn't think of this. He did. This man won 6 cases in the U.S. Supreme Court between 1921 and 1950 under separate but equal, getting black students into white schools. And you know how he did it? The University of Maryland has a law school. There is a black law school in Maryland as well. And Mr. Smith, who is black, wants to go to law school. Now, he can go to this other law school, which is separate, but it's not equal. And since it is not equal, he has to be admitted to the University of Maryland. This man knew that America was not prepared to reject separate but equal, so he took another path. And six times he won in the U.S. Supreme Court. He died in 1950, 4 years before Brown versus the Board, so he never got to see the culmination of his strategy. They won't overturn separate but equal, but they'll have to enforce separate but equal if I put it in front of them. That's how Charles Hamilton Houston made a difference. Really good advice from Yogi. If you come to a fork in the road, just take it. Lawyers, I was so amazed at the earlier comments. We can tend to be cautious. We can tend to think that won't work. It is really interesting to me that a lot of the complaints about groups like Black Lives Matter, Colin Kaepernick's protest in the NFL, people are saying it's not the right way to do it. You know, you're going too fast or that's too divisive. And what I would wish everybody in this room would do is go back and read the letter from the Birmingham jail that Martin Luther King wrote, because we hold him up as such an icon today, right? And we have like his birthday and the monument in Washington, D.C., and everybody loves Martin Luther King today. But back in the 60s, it wasn't that way. And in the 50s, it wasn't that way. You're going too fast. You're making people uncomfortable. You're stepping out and saying things that are going to cause more harm than good. And it's amazing. We are saying the exact same things to the young activists of today. Dabo Swinney, the head coach at Clemson, in what I think was like a completely well-meaning thing, was talking about Colin Kaepernick's protest. And he said, you know, I really want to follow Martin Luther King. And Dr. King wouldn't do a protest like that. And I'm like, yo, Coach Swinney, you need to go back to the history course. Because that's exactly what Dr. King would have done. There is a window that is open on justice in America. And like every other window in our political history, it will close. The time is now. Everybody remembers these women. And there are times when in my job, I feel completely overwhelmed and frustrated. I feel like I am not going to move this ball at all. This is too big. This is too much of a problem. And for me, I think back to these women. These women who were the heroes of the Montgomery bus boycott, not Martin Luther King. I think there are enough people in this room who know that Dr. King got put in charge of that boycott in this process. The older ministers said, somebody's going to jail behind this and it ain't going to be us. Let's put him in charge. He wasn't the hero of this bus boycott. He didn't do a damn thing. These were the heroes, these women that got up at 4 o'clock in the morning and walked to the white neighborhoods where they were maids in white homes to do the work that they needed to earn money for their families, and then they walked back to their neighborhoods at night so that their days weren't 9 in the morning till 5 in the evening, try 4 in the morning until 10 in the evening, and then get up and do it all over again for more than a year. Everybody knows Rosa Parks, but nobody remembers all of these other women, these completely ordinary women who had no kind of resources compared to what those of us in this room have. No kind of education compared to what those of us in this room have. And they ended segregation in public travel in America. They had no idea they were going to do it, but they did. These kids who sat in at these lunch counters, they had no idea that they were going to end segregation in public accommodations in America. But they did. And so a lot of times when I get frustrated and tired, I ask myself, what am I going to say to them? What am I going to say to those women? I'm kind of tired, and it's really frustrating, and people said mean things about me in the newspaper, And so I don't want to do this anymore. All of a sudden, those things don't work. So the future ain't what it used to be. We're not going back to make anything great. We're going forward. So what's happening? In 2015, two sitting justices of the United States Supreme Court go in front of Congress and say, all those sentencing laws that you guys have been passing, they are absolutely insane. They are crazy. That's never happened before in the history of America. Utah has almost eliminated the homeless problem in the entire state. You know how they did it? They built apartments and they gave them to people. Because they were spending less money by building those apartments and giving those people some structure in their lives than they were for all the emergency services and everything else that they were spending. 78% reduction. They've almost eliminated it. And you want to know an amazing thing? The people who have moved into those homes, they're doing amazing things like getting jobs and engaging in the community because they now see that they've got a future.
You've been listening to Jeffrey Robinson, ACLU Deputy Director, speaking about the work of the ACLU Center for Justice in reforming the policies of over-incarceration that have led the U.S. to imprison more people than any other country in the world. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. The show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. The Social Security disability system is bad and getting worse. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when disability attorney Bob Holland explains the problems and how attorneys help claimants overcome them to get the benefits they deserve. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbrecht.